Good afternoon. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. We'll begin today with this update on the status of the six men who were unaccounted for and presumed dead after the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge Tuesday morning. WIPR's Emily Hofstetter reports that yesterday, divers found the bodies of two men, Alejandro Hernandez Fuentes, age 35, of Baltimore, and Dorleon Roniel Castillo Cabrera, age 26, of Dundalk. Their bodies were found inside a truck submerged in the Patapsco River. Two other workers who were killed but whose remains have not yet been recovered have been identified by CASA, a local nonprofit that supports immigrants. Minor Suazo Sandoval, who emigrated from Honduras 17 years ago, and Miguel Luna, who has lived in the United States for 19 years. Divers will continue their search after crews are able to remove some of the wreckage from the water. It's believed that the workers' vehicles are inaccessible because debris from the bridge is covering them. Emily Hofstetter also reports that at a press conference last night, the NTSB said that the Dolly, the ship that struck the bridge, was carrying 56 containers of hazardous materials. An as yet unknown number of those containers did fall into the water. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homenday said her agency's investigation could take 1 or 2 years to complete. The Baltimore Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs has set up a donation account to help the families of those directly affected by this tragedy.
Something magic happens every time you go. You make the magic happen, the magic of Orioles baseball. When the game is close and the O's are hot, there's a thundering roar from 34 to give it all they've got. And you never know who's gonna hear the call. Every game has a different start. That's the magic of
Well, something magic did happen last year. Can the Orioles keep up the good work? Well, if the weather behaves, we'll begin to find out this afternoon. It's opening day at Camden Yards. The O's come into the season with the winningest record in spring training and almost a surfeit of new talent. Jackson Holliday, the best young player in all of baseball, didn't make the cut this week, but that could change, of course, as the season progresses. The Orioles also have a new owner. David Rubenstein has put together a star-studded team of investors that includes former mayors of Baltimore and New York and baseball and basketball Hall of Famers. MLB owners approved the sale of Rubenstein's controlling stake in the Orioles yesterday. They valued the team and the Masson TV franchise at $1.725 billion. Mr. Rubenstein held a press conference with Governor Wes Moore at Camden Yards in the last hour, and my first guest today attended that press conference. Kyle Goon is a sports columnist for the Baltimore Banner, and he joins us on the line from Camden Yards. Hey, Kyle, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, I'm standing in the warehouse in the same room as Cal Ripken Jr., one of the investors you previously mentioned. And yeah, what a whirlwind day, getting introduced to the new owner of the Orioles. And then, of course, in a couple hours, we're going to have a baseball game.
We are indeed. So what happened at the press conference with the governor and Mr. Rubenstein? What did we learn?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a very, odd week in Baltimore, a tough, dark week in many respects. So there was a lot of, time and thought given to the folks who have been affected by the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse and thoughts there. And I think a hope that, sports will be sort of a factor that kind of helps, find some unity through this time. So Wes Moore and David Rubenstein both spoke about that, but it was also our first chance to kind of hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, just Rubenstein's view for the franchise. And he said, I hope, You know, I know I've gotten a lot of celebration for buying this baseball team, the baseball team that he watched when he was growing up in Baltimore. But he says, I hope this isn't the high watermark. I hope we're celebrating a World Series. And he sees, you know, a lot of pieces already intact to help the Orioles get there for the first time since 1983.
He's got a long, long history, Mr. Rubenstein does, of civic-minded giving, as you wrote in a nice piece about him. He's a very wealthy guy. He's a baseball fan, but he has pledged not to to meddle in baseball affairs. He said the other day that, you know, doesn't have a history of making baseball decisions, and he's going to leave that up to Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias, the general manager of the team. I wonder, did he mention anything about the development aspect of the area around Camden Yards? That was a sticking point in the agreement that was eventually reached with the Angelos family before they sold the team. But the governor worked very hard on that over a period of months, maybe even years, once he took office. Did he talk at all about, you know, what the environs around Camden Yards may look like eventually?
Yeah, he did not talk about that specifically, but we know that to be a huge issue. You know, one thing that David did say to the Baltimore Sun in an interview was that he wasn't looking to opt out of Camden Yards before the length of the 30-year lease right now. You know, the owner of the team has the right to negotiate development rights, as you're talking about, from between now and the end of 2027. So that is a certain amount of time, but that's also going to be something that is negotiated upon and then has to go through the Board of Public Works and other government bodies to make sure that everything's above board. So that's going to be something that, you know, if Dave Rubenstein has the goal of extending this franchise through 2053 in Baltimore, then that deal will have to be completed in the next 3 years.
And of course, Mr. Rubenstein has committed to, you know, fielding a really good team and bringing a World Series home to Baltimore, as you said, you know, for the first time since 1983. Brandon Hyde, the manager, was asked a few weeks ago in an interview with MLB.com how this team gets better. They won more games than anybody else, 101 last year. They had an excellent spring training. Here's what Brandon Hyde had to say about the prospects of improving this Orioles team.
Well, I think, we have room to improve, for sure. And a lot of our guys are just kind of getting into their prime years or something younger than that. So I think guys are going to build off the seasons they had last year. We have a really strong farm system. You're going to see more players come up this year. But I think, you know, defensively and pitching, that's going to be the key. And if our young pitchers can continue to improve, if Grayson continues to improve, Dean Kramer continue to improve, you know, Kyle Bradish was third in Cy Young last year. We're really excited about these young guys, and they still have room to grow.
So, Kyle, what do you think about the decision to have the top prospect in the major leagues, Jackson Holliday, who has played shortstop most of his young career, sent back to the minors for what most people expect will be a little bit of time, probably not the entire season, but not starting off the season with Jackson Holliday, who in spring training was playing second base?
Yeah, Tom, and I don't want to get too technical here, but I mean, it's interesting that the Orioles would be grooming the guy that, as you mentioned, is the top prospect in all of baseball. Many executives think he might be the best player under 23 that hasn't yet played in the majors. And they go ahead and don't send him up. And, you know, a lot of people are really impatient to see Jackson, obviously the son of a major leaguer, Matt Holliday. You know, there's some complicated things with his contract that you kind of wonder if the Orioles are trying to extend it and kind of extend his service time, which is just a very technical thing. But the bottom line is he's going to be on the team this year. He's been hitting tremendously in spring training. He's probably going to play second base. I think the biggest concern was that last year he did not play second base every day in his minor league stints, but he's risen so rapidly. He's been very poised. He looked really good against major league pitching and those are all the boxes. So even though it's not happening now, which is a little confusing, it's going to happen. And there's a lot of indicators that Jackson Holliday is going to be a total star.
And it's possible that money does have something to do with this, that, you know, this decision is premised at least in part on the fact that once he comes up to the majors, the clock starts ticking for his, you know, initial contract and eventual free agency. Is it cynical to think in those terms and to think that that's a decision that, you know, was made not purely on baseball factors?
It's a little cynical. I mean, baseball has recognized that, you know, teams besides the Orioles have done these things, have waited to call up their best prospects. Just so it takes another year for these players to reach free agency when they don't get a full year of service time. But, you know, they've changed some rules and, you know, a player at Jackson's level who, you know, potentially could be a rookie of the year might get a full year of service time anyway. So it's a little bit technical. And there are sort of some safeguards against the kinds of things that the Orioles have been kind of accused of doing along those lines. But, you know, I think the bottom line is he will be up this year. And I think even in throughout the organization, there's a recognition that as precocious as Jackson has been, I mean, he's only 20 years old. When you get a guy who's that ready that early, that's going to be a really good player, and he's going to be tough to keep down.
And you mentioned in your piece that Mr. Rubenstein comes from humble roots. He's the son of a postal worker. He has become fabulously wealthy. He's the head of the Carlyle Group, a huge investment firm that he co-founded. What about affordability, both in going to the games at Camden Yards and watching the games on Masson? We heard a few weeks ago that Masson has decided to raise the rates for what it will cost to have that package as part of your deal with television.
Yeah. I'm not going to start there because that's a little more well understood. Masson is going to move to a higher tier on Xfinity. So that's obviously a huge cable provider in Baltimore and the Maryland region. That's the only cable provider I personally have in my home in the city of Baltimore. So it's just making it a little harder for people to tune in. And over the course of the season, if you're an Xfinity customer, you're going to see your bill go up if you want to keep Masson. So it's tough because I think in you know, TV right now, the biggest property, the most valuable property is live sports. And the Orioles as an ascendant team are very marketable in this region and very exciting, obviously. So I view it cynically as Comcast trying to squeeze out every last dime of the customers they do have. And to me, that's a mistake. I mean, you know, the Orioles have announced a deal since then with Fubo TV, which is a streamer. But, you know, I think the Major League Baseball has a goal of getting a direct-to-consumer product, a streaming service, essentially, that wouldn't black out local games, hopefully by 2025. But it won't be this season. You got to just reach deeper into your wallet.
Yeah, that's a long time to wait, and it's going to cost $20 or $30 a month to have the Orioles as part of your cable package if you have Comcast. And if you're in the city, you have no choice but to have Comcast Xfinity. That deal was struck years ago in the Stephanie Rawlings Blake administration when she was the mayor. But still, Mr. Rubenstein, of course, could affect that. He could decide that, you know, we can make the games less expensive to watch on television, and so we can wait and see if that's an option that he'll exercise. But generally speaking, people are very excited, not just about the team, but about the fact that Rubenstein is the guy who bought this team. He's a local guy. He's a baseball lover. He's a lover of Baltimore. He's always been loyal to his hometown. What do you expect will be different between the ownership of a David Rubenstein and the ownership of Peter Angelos, who passed away just last week after, you know, years of being incapacitated with illness? But in terms of the Angelos era versus the Rubenstein era, a lot of people very excited about the new era.
Yeah, and I think there's two things, and you have to talk about two different people who have been in control of the Orioles the last 30 years. I mean, with Peter, the thing was meddling. The thing was getting his hands involved in baseball decisions. And, you know, David has sort of stated from the outset that that's not his intention, that Mike Elias, who's the general manager, he's the expert. He's guided the franchise to the point where they have the number one farm system in baseball. And the Orioles won the most games in the American League last year. So I think there's an amount of faith that he's placing in the decision makers who are already here, whereas Peter Angelos, you know, and after experiencing some success kind of chased his guys off. And then the other sort of prong here is, you know, for the last few years, John Angelos has been the control person of the Orioles. And he kind of made headlines last summer by saying, hey, you know, I don't know if I can afford to keep these players, Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, who can afford to keep them around? We're going to have to jack the prices of the tickets. And obviously, that was not a great thing to say for a fan base that has just been through some trying years under the Angelos
14
family,
straight losing, you know, seasons.
So it was not well received. And, you know, it definitely remains to be seen what kind of owner David Rubenstein is. You know, I think when you look at somebody who comes from the private equity world and who has talked about the value of sports franchises as just constantly rising, you kind of wonder if it just feels like a part of the portfolio. But, you know, he has not made indications that being able to afford salaries is a huge problem of his.
Let me ask you about some other things you've written about. One of them has to do with Shohei Ohtani, the fantastic player who's now with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the betting scandal surrounding him. His translator is accused of stealing basically about $4.5 million from Shohei Ohtani to place bets with an illegal bookie. Is that staining the sport? Are we at the beginning of this story? Where do you see this? Where do you see this being right now? And where do you see it going in terms of baseball's integrity?
Yeah, I think we might be at the beginning of the awareness of this kind of issue, but I don't think we're at the beginning of the problems that legal gambling and blurring of the line between sports and gambling has created. I mean, we're also this week, there was a scandal involving a Toronto Raptors player in the NBA who is accused of manipulating his performances to hit prop bets. And that's just, it's already seems like, you know, there's a number of things throughout different leagues. I mean, in the NCAA, there's been stuff. Now the NBA, the MLB, sports embracing legalized gambling to get a cut has just encouraged sort of a blurring of the lines, as it were, and just, you know, made it more accessible to more people. And there used to be this just sort of rigorous separation of sports and gambling from the idea that leagues felt like it might threaten their integrity. And now that sports gambling is legalized in about 40 states, I believe, now that you see, you know, leagues embracing, even, you know, in the NBA app, you can bet on prop bets from there. It's just, it's so pervasive that it's not that surprising that there are some scandals popping up and there are some areas of athletes seemingly making bets or being involved in betting that could really harm the integrity of the sport. So you're seeing the NCAA this week make some calls to ban athletes from prop betting. I think there's going to be a lot more of that in the coming weeks and months.
So we just have a couple more minutes with you. We got to let you go and cover the game, etc. But I do want to end not on a note of talking about scandal and gambling, but talking about the prospects for the O's this season. The expectations are high. They had the best league, you know, best record in the league, as I mentioned earlier. Here's what Brandon Hyde, the manager of the team, had to say about the expectations for this team this year.
You know, our guys aren't fazed by anything. I think that we've taken such big strides here the last couple years. Obviously, last year was a year we're really proud of. Didn't end the way we wanted it to, but, you know, winning the American League East with this group, pretty much everybody's coming back. A lot of guys are back and a year older, and we're kind of getting younger at times a little bit because we have so much depth and our minor league system's so strong at the upper levels. But we're proud of last year and just want to build on that for next year.
So, Kyle, in terms of the mood in the locker room and the mood among the players, last year's end of the season was really devastating. They were never swept the entire season except for the playoffs in the last three games that they played. That hit hard. Do you think that will serve as a good motivator for this year? And what do you think there's any difference in the attitude that the team has coming into this year than they did last year, for example?
You know, it is interesting. I mean, it's such a long season. I mean, 162 games, and then to see it stop short, I think was jarring for a lot of people and maybe the team itself. But I did ask Gunnar Henderson in the locker room in the clubhouse on Tuesday, hey, do you think about that Texas Rangers series? He said, not that much, a little for motivation, but not that much. I mean, I think, one, the Orioles are very young, so there is still this sense of, hey, you know, we don't know what our ceiling is. We don't know that we can't be told what we can and can't do at this point. So I think there's somewhat of an idealism to the identity of this team that really made them so good and competitive last year. But also, I mean, I think they are locking in. I mean, the Orioles added an ace from Milwaukee, Corbin Burnes, who is a former Cy Young Award winner. And this just gives an upside to this pitching staff that they didn't have last year. And you know, when you kind of look down the pipeline, obviously Jackson Holliday, Kyle Stowers, who's a promising outfielder, Kobe Mayo, who's a promising third or first baseman, and a couple of the guys who might come off the injury list. I mean, Kyle Bradish was their best starter last year. John Means might come back midseason. So they have a lot of guys who aren't even on this opening day roster who could still help them down the line, and they're going to have a lot of ability to make trades and do deals down the line as we get closer to the trade deadline. So there's just a lot of ammunition in the Orioles organization right now, and they're going to have a lot of opportunities to be really competitive.
There is a lot of ammunition, and so as we finish up here, do you think with all that talent, is it the fact that Adley Rutschman, the catcher, the best catcher in the league, I think, you know, that's kind of undisputed. But is he the undisputed leader of this team as well?
I don't know if he's undisputed as the leader of this team, but he definitely is one of the most important players. I mean, you know, anytime you're the guy who works with the pitching staff to run a good defensive game, I mean, that's an important player. He's also one of the best hitters. He's the best guy who always gets on base. You know, he was a leadoff hitter for the Orioles last year, which is really unusual for a catcher. So he's just the guy that sets the tone in a lot of ways on both sides of the ball. But then on the other hand, I mean, I think he's going to be first in line potentially to do a long-term deal in Baltimore. You know, that's just kind of the unanswered question. And even David Rubenstein hasn't committed to doing that yet. But I think that will come to a head, and we'll see if it comes to a head with Adley Rutschman, who may be the first domino to fall to get some of these young guys who have reinvigorated the team to stay around here for a longer time.
Yeah, well, on the first day of the season, you always have hope springing eternal, and that's certainly one of the things all Orioles fans can hope for. Kyle Goon is a sports columnist for our news partner, the Baltimore Banner. Kyle, thanks so much. I know this is an incredibly busy day for you. I appreciate your taking the time.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, enjoy the game. First pitch, 3:05 this afternoon. And up next, the School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University is more than 100 years old. And just 2 years ago, they appointed its first African-American department chair. We'll meet Dr. Keisha Pollock Porter on the other side of a quick break. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.